Hello and welcome to episode number 20 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm Robert Rosenthal.
Coming up, in honor of yesterday's Super Bowl halftime show, we're going to have a wedding live on the podcast.
And the Cheez-It guy from the Citrus Bowl is going to marry them?
That's right.
Yes, love it.
Hey, Illinois has a Super Bowl champion again, Devin Witherspoon. We'll talk about that. Also, the basketball weekend that was. All good things must come to an end. The 12-game winning streak for the Illini men's basketball team came to an end in East Lansing. It was another tight one with some controversy between Illinois and Michigan State. And women's hoops dropped a game on Sunday against USC. So we're going to get into all of that, some football talk as well. But before we do that, since Robert insists on being the one who pushes the button, would you please do the honors and...
Watch, no drama this time. I'm just going to reach over like this and just light the eye.
What's the saying? Death, taxes, and then the thing that
losing always... at Michigan State.
Well, losing at Michigan State is one thing, but it's a close game. In fact, this one goes to overtime, and there's always just going to be something.
Yes.
I call it the Tom Izzo time machine. You just know. It's kind of just, I've seen this movie before, haven't I?
Yep. It's interesting how that played out exactly like many thought it would. They're going to make it physical. They know they're deeper, so they're going to go with every wear down tactic possible. Izzo teams always rebound, so that's going to be the battle here. They're going to beat up Wagler until he's black and blue and not let him have anything. And it worked. It was a brilliant game plan, and it took down Illinois. So it's, to me, that's when one guy gets 16 offensive rebounds. Kohler got 16 offensive rebounds. When Fears gets 15 assists, that moves a game into tip your cap territory. They, Kohler goes up against the best, maybe the best rebounding team in the Big Ten, if not the country, and grabs 16 boards, including the one board that won the game when he rebounded a missed three with 12 seconds left and kicked it out for the winning shot, or the shot that at least put Michigan State ahead. So yeah, it's a good game plan. They made it work. Yes, there's some controversy and we'll talk about it, but classic Izzo, kind of love it or hate it. That's classic Izzo.
Okay, a couple of things in my takes on it. Number one, would have been nice to have Kylan Boswell. I think you could say, the team could get away without Kylan Boswell when they won 12 games in a row. But that was one game where you go, are you 3 points better defensively with Kylan Boswell in that game? Yeah, probably.
Certainly.
Number two, and I'm going to borrow a page from the Robert Rosenthal analysis. At the beginning of the year of football, at some point, Illinois has that first road game. And then there's this discussion that I've had with you before. Well, it's the first road game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stuff's going to go wrong.
You could just look at X's and O's in the matchups all you want. It's the first road game.
Yep.
This was not the first road game. This was the third of three consecutive huge road games. Obviously, Illinois wasn't intimidated by that environment. But the other side, Izzo and Michigan State had just lost back-to-back games, including one against their rival at home, and then one they probably shouldn't have lost on the road to Minnesota. They're just not going to lose three in a row.
Yeah.
That's the feeling I had going into this. Like, Illinois could play really well, and Michigan State's just not going to lose three in a row.
Yeah.
And number three is Michigan State is good for 5 to 10 points at home.
Absolutely.
Yes. It's the Tom Izzo time machine.
Mm-hmm.
That environment, we can talk about calls all we want, but this is not the first time there's been an Illinois-Michigan State game where you you feel like calls or non-calls were a factor.
Yep.
And I'm not even criticizing. I'm just saying that's just as how it goes.
Yep.
It's just how it goes there.
If you talk to any... If you talk to one of the 43 Minnesota basketball fans, they will say about the game 2 weeks ago that it was a homering in Champaign, that they had it close, but then the refs just let Illinois go to the line in the last 5 minutes, and Illinois didn't even have to shoot. It was just drive. They're going to get the foul call. So I've always said that home fans don't, you know, as a fan of Illinois, when I'm in Champaign, somebody has to point out to me that it's imbalanced toward the Illini because I'll never see that. And then after the game, it's like, oh, Illinois shot 27 free throws. The opponent shot 4. Oh, okay. Yes, you can balance it out with Illinois not a defense that fouls very much. But, yes, there have been games where Illinois got some assistance, or if there's a 50-50 call, it goes the way of the home team. In my entire fan experience, games at Wisconsin and games at Michigan State, I sense it the most that all the 50-50 calls go the other way. You got to overcome it. You know, we remember Trent Frazier overcoming it in 2022 with a massive three-pointer at the end that put the game away. So it's going to be close, and they're going to be physical, and you have to be there at the end and make the plays, and it just didn't happen. Look, when a game goes to overtime, you could look to 10 things, right? Like, just change this one thing. David Mirkovich steps into the lane on a missed free throw. They get a bonus free throw then because his foot was in. There, take that 1 point away, and it's different at the end of regulation, right? You can always find little things like that. For this, it was the Izzo teams did the Izzoing, and they out-rebounded Illinois by 10, and they did the things they needed to do to execute the game plan and win the game. So while I may not like it, or there may be some distaste in my mouth, you know, it's Michigan State, and this is what they do. And they pulled it off.
Illinois' two losses in the Big Ten have come on under 10 second to go three-pointers.
Yep.
So they're 0-2, and they're only 2 one-possession games.
Yep.
But here's what I would say is the positive and the negative and the bottom line. The negative is, as it comes to the Big Ten title race, you needed that win. There's just a little bit more of a mountain to climb. You know, when is Michigan going to lose again? You don't know. But to be able to have an outright title, you probably needed that one. And obviously, you got to get Michigan at home later on. And you would like some help.
Yes.
Outside that. But in the bigger picture, here's the positive side. Illinois' net, was it 5 or 4 going into the game? Because it's 4 today.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was on Saturday.
It either didn't go down or it went up a notch.
Yep.
4, again, that doesn't mean Illinois would be a 1 seed and is a top 4, as we've talked about on this podcast, but it means they're really good. And
yep,
losing by 2 points in overtime on the road to another high net in a quad 1 game, a quad 1A game at that, does not really hurt you in that sense. And so it more impacts the Big Ten race than it does actually the postseason picture. I don't think the committee would punish you too much for losing a game like that when you're missing a key player and it went down to the wire and this or that.
In a sense, these games are toss-outs by the committee. You know, when you'll get a committee chairman to come on after Selection Sunday and give, like, comments, or when they do that mock bracket a month out and they allow the media to sit in to see how the process works, one of the talking points that always comes back is, you know, road losses in Quad 1, especially the top of Quad 1, Quad 1A road losses, the committee doesn't even really talk about them. Like, they don't – it's like, look – we're evaluating 365 teams here. 363 of those teams would lose that game at Michigan State, is how they like view those kind of things. You lose at a top 10 team on the road. Okay. You know, that's in a sense we don't even need to evaluate that game. Everybody loses that game. And so it's those kind of things. Now, if you win that game, now you have something to hang on your resume, and you have that. And that's right. What the Purdue win and the Nebraska win will be. A loss like this isn't much of a ding at all in any way the committee frames these things. They want you to schedule these games and then see if you can win some of them.
Well, I mean, in this case, it was scheduled because of the conference you play in.
Sure.
But if you were to go back 2.5 weeks ago and say the next three road games you have are against top 10 or top 5 opponents, how many can you win? Wouldn't most people say, boy, I'd like to get two of them, but I'll take just one?
Yes, everyone would have accepted one.
And now you were in a greedy spot where you wanted all three, but in the bigger picture, the evaluative picture, you go, you just won two out of those three games, and the one you lost was against a bit of a backed into a corner Spartan team.
Yep.
And you only barely lost.
Yep.
So which lens do you want to look through it? I think it's just I'll put this out there to you, Mr. Fan.
Mm-hmm.
Would it have been an easier pill if you won two out of three but beat Purdue and Michigan State but lost to Nebraska on the road? I just think it's a little bit like, why did it have to be Izzo again?
Yes.
And
yes.
I don't even know that Izzo's – look, we can get into this. I mean,
let's do it because I don't think I can answer that without
put
that.
Put this into effect. I have this perspective on Tom Izzo that there's a love-hate relationship with him.
Sure.
Amongst – I think there's other figures in the Big Ten or in basketball where it's all hate or it's all love.
Yes.
But I think with Izzo, it's a little bit of both.
Yes.
Because there's something about him where you just, how can you just not respect the guy?
Yes.
But there always seems to be something around when these two teams meet, at least these two teams. Jeremy Fears this year. It was Matty Sissoko a few years ago. It was Draymond Green years ago.
Yes. Yes.
I just think emotionally, you almost would have rather beat Michigan State than, let's say, Nebraska.
Yes. In my mind, here's how it. Look, I was at the Underwoods event. I don't think it was last year that Izzo was there. It was 2 years ago. The Coaches versus Cancer event that
They're
happens
friends.
In April. And Izzo in an event like that is great, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's folksy. He's funny. He's the dean of Big Ten coaches. He's perfect. And so you leave there like, that guy's he's a good guy. I like Izzo. Well, good old Izzo. You know, and then you watch them play dumb with Fears. You watch them, you guys think he's intentionally? Look, his foot went up. He kicked at that guy at Minnesota. He obviously tripped him. Look, this is Grayson Allen 2.0. Watch all of these things. And for Michigan State to be like, I guess maybe these are – it's just some bad luck, you know, for them to play dumb with it. Now I'm totally back to like, wait, this is Izzo-ing again. And Michigan State is the program of who? Me? Like, you think us? You think we did that? And that's always been the like grind your teeth thing toward Michigan State, right? For at least on the fan level. So here's my take on the whole thing. Did Fears try to trip David Mirkovich? In my opinion, 100%. Senses him over his shoulder, takes a half step, not a natural step. Takes a half step on his right foot so they can get back to his left foot, stick it out, and trip him as he goes by. We've seen enough evidence that this is a kid who does that. He then tweets after the game an image of Illinois' 4 losses to Michigan State in a row and says, boy, must be on the refs each time, huh? Just as a twist the knife, you know, and I sit back and I read that and it grinds my fan gears and I see all of it and I'm like, there should be justice. And then I settle here. It is fun is probably the wrong word, but it is comforting to have Michigan State in that spot in my brain. There's something very normal, like when Lou Henson and Bobby Knight would start yapping at each other over the officials, and that one time that Henson said he's just a bully and like he just bullies everyone, and you know, Knight snaps back in his next press conference. There was something like, oh, this is 1980s Big Ten basketball, and these two are going to yap at each other in press conference. There was just something comforting, something real about that. To have Michigan State in this seat of, what, us? You think he's intentionally tripping? Oh, my gosh, no, we're pure as the white-driven snow. No, no, you're not. And but it's kind of fun to have you in that seat again because Matty Sissoko, like, oh, he's the greatest kid in the world. He would, you know, exact quotes. I wrote about it the next day. Like, they talked about it like it was a, you know, a barroom fight, I think was the quote, or something like that, of when Io got his nose broken. And then they played the, what? Oh, my gosh, you think he intentionally? He was just trying to block the shot. That is Michigan State. That is who they are. That's who they sit. That's the chair they sit in my fan brain, of they are always going to do the pearl clutching. Us? You think we? You think fear's actually? Oh, my gosh. And I'm comfortable with them in that spot in my brain. It's fun. It's fun to have them in that seat because that's how, you know, it's like, again, I'm talking here on fan levels, right? If Michigan does something.
Can you make your point a fourth way?
Yes. If Michigan does something on a, I'm a Michigan man, we're the leaders and best, we do things a little differently around here, then that fits into that slot, right? Round peg, round hole. I'm like, oh, that is pure Michigan right there. You know, you see the pure Michigan ads on TV. There it is. If they're going to make a moment of like, a Michigan man would never do such a thing. Yep, that fits. That fits right into the slot where they're supposed to be. The slot where Michigan State exists in my brain, in my fan brain, is this. Oh my gosh, we would never. You think Draymond Green tried to trip him? No. He's the greatest player in the world. That's Michigan State in my fan brain.
But you need him there.
Yes. I need them on that wall. I want them on that wall.
This is the Roadrunners. Like, you know what? Life's better with the Coyote in my life.
Yes. Yes. Very. That's a great, great way to put it. I need them in that slot so that I can grind my teeth and feel really good when Illinois gets a win.
In wrestling parlance, you need the heel.
Yes.
You need the villain.
Yes. And look, that's nothing to take away from Izzo, a brilliant coach. He had the game plan to beat Wagler and beat Illinois. He figured it out. They executed it. They won the game. That's why he's a Hall of Fame coach. But yes, they're also
and
always going to play dumb in moments like what Fears is doing, and they will not punish him. They encourage that.
Yes.
Why would they punish him if they've gotten away with it for years and years and years?
And Fears doesn't get 15 assists because he may play dirty.
Yes.
He gets 15 assists because he's a really good point guard.
Yes.
And their offense is predicated on a transition that requires.
Yep.
I mean, he has always, whenever Michigan State has struggled, it's because their point guard wasn't up to the standard that they need to make quick decisions in a fast offense. That's why they are what they are. But something that Tom Izzo knows very well is how to get any extra little edge.
Yes.
And he can lean on referees, and the crowd is right on top of you, and he gets his players to play as hard and as physical as possible up to the line.
Yep.
And when you get a guy like Jeremy Fears, did he trip him? I look at that video and go, well, I could see the case for both. Brad Underwood, in his media availability on Monday, wouldn't take the bait and said it doesn't do me any good to comment, and in fact I've heard from many officials. And he didn't go any further than that, but I interpret it to be, we could probably see it both ways. And he kind of just let it be right up to that line. And then you can go and say, well, are you not giving him the benefit of the doubt based on past history and not just looking at the play in and of itself? Sure. Look, all I can say is David Mirkovich tripped.
Yes.
Why did he trip? It's a little bit left up to interpretation from there.
Let's also note that left a wide-open three-point shooter who hit the three in a game that ended. But that's my fan brain taking over here. Listen, I'm going to say it this way. I am now going to reveal to you the origin story for this villain. And the origin story for the villain of Michigan State basketball. For the villain of, was that a dirty play? Oh, my gosh, no, we would never.
Is this Robert's personal villain or everyone's villain?
This is the origin story of why they have that reputation of your Draymond Green, Matty Sissoko, Jeremy Fears, as we've mentioned. And it comes from their title game. If you remember,
2000, you're talking about?
Yes, back in 2000. They're in the title game. They win the title game over Florida. With somewhere in the second half, Mateen Cleaves is going in for a layup. Teddy DePay on Florida, who was known as the Jeremy Fears of the time. Like, he had that reputation, that Grayson Allen, here's the guy who watches feet, basically stomps on Cleaves' ankle as he goes up for the layup. It's a one-on-one, like, breakaway kind of thing, stomps on his ankle. Cleaves turns to the camera, or turns to his bench. You can see him mouth, it's broke, like he thought that the kid broke his ankle. Michigan State team's ready to fight him. They're ready to take him out. They know that he just was watching his legs when he went to plant for the layup. DePay just stomped right on his ankle and tried to break his ankle. Refs didn't see it. There was no video review at the time. He couldn't do it, but it was very obvious. You watch the replay, he stomped on that. Cleaves goes off. There's this famous moment where he comes out of the locker room, has it taped up, returns to the game. They win the national title and this and that. And I've always said it was kind of that moment of like, okay, we won the title despite this player playing like this, that this like villain origin story began as to why we've seen so many Michigan State players do this, like, oh, did he injure him? Whoops. It all sources back to Teddy DePay. That's my theory.
Is this like the anti-hero story?
Yes.
Origin
story? Oh, I'm going to write a whole fan fiction thing on it. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Is this like why the kid that got snubbed in Mr. Incredibles mm-hmm. became the villain? Because...
And I don't hate it. I need that. I need that in my life. I need a Michigan State somewhere in my fan brain to exist in that spot of, come on, guys. You know that he's doing this intentionally. This is all part of the bit. We know. Stop playing the game in front of the cameras. We know.
Next up, Tuesday night, home against Wisconsin, which used to be a difficult thing.
But I mean, probably still is.
Oh, I'm not... I'm just saying there used to be a time where you would just kind of like, oh,
yep.
Wisconsin, we know how this game's going to go. That's not the case anymore.
Yes.
And we will talk about the results of that in our next episode. But
yes.
Illinois gets two home games in a row, Wisconsin and Indiana. And I would surmise that Illinois is going to be considered a favorite in all remaining games except maybe the Michigan game.
Yes.
It's going to be fun. It could. Down the stretch will come in this Big Ten title race, which still is a possibility.
Yes. Illinois still holds their own. They control their own destiny for a Big Ten title. You know, run the table, which includes another Michigan loss, and you don't need anybody else to lose to hang a banner. So it's all still out there, even with this loss. And, you know, these are two games you've got to have.
All right, yesterday, Illinois women's basketball hosted USC before an announced sellout against the Trojans and lost the game 70-62. They fell behind by double digits. Gretchen Dolan was not there as well. It was a pink-out game, and Ella Peterson, our producer, was there also on the call for Big Ten Plus. Ella, exhausted from a big game yesterday?
Not necessarily exhausted, but it was definitely a long weekend. But it was some fun basketball to watch, so I was entertained.
I've noted that this team does not get blown out much, which Shauna Green talked about in postgame, that margin of victory is important when it comes to your postseason resume. But it was a second straight game where Illinois fell behind by double digits. What stood out to you about it?
I think it's right from the beginning. So first quarter, they're already down 12-0. It was Jazzy Davidson, who was a treat to watch. From USC, you want to talk about freshman phenoms. It's been fun to follow Ciara Parchment, just with the work you do, working for Big Ten Network out of Champaign. But then it's been a lot of fun to see these other freshmen come in. So Jazzy Davidson setting the tone off the bat for USC, and they were so quick to come out. And you thought, second half, okay, Illinois, this is where they get the momentum back. They're playing in front of a huge crowd at the State Farm Center, and it just doesn't happen. USC had an answer for everything that they did.
I wasn't there because I was still on the train on my way back from East Lansing. What was the environment like? I mean, you've covered a lot of these. So you're sitting down there, you're courtside, you're looking up at the largest crowd in very, very, very long time. So what was the environment like?
I would say it was fun because at first you're celebrating National Girls and Women in Sports Day, mm-hmm. which is a huge deal. I saw something today that for the production side of things, less than 15% of women are within sports reporting, sports broadcasting. Mm-hmm. So that was cool from our crew side. But then
and your entire crew was women, right?
Entire crew was women.
Like from cameras, to in the booth, everybody.
Yep. So it was all women. It was incredible. And then you look around, and regardless of whatever people want to say about the sellout, they sold all the tickets, and it was so cool to see all these people show up. In ways that it was the first time in the Shauna Green era. It was also the first time since renovating the State Farm Center. Mm-hmm. So there were two previous sellouts, but that was before State Farm Center was renovated. So mm-hmm. so much more seating. So it was just fun, and it was great to see support for these women that have worked so hard all season and kind of be able to see the support from the community.
Yeah.
And they did it on Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah.
I know it was earlier, but you got everybody out. It was a good effort. It was a great effort by everyone involved to get everyone there. And hey, we're proud of you, and we're proud of you and Maisie for being a part of that crew.
Thanks, good job. Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah, it had to be fun, right? Like, I mean, that's like, you know, a little historic moment here, and you get to be courtside, sitting there, calling it, everything else. I don't know if Maisie was in your ear, but it has to be fun to do that, right?
It's funny. Maisie was in my ear like I'm in your guys' ear.
Yeah?
For this stuff.
Okay, good. Good.
I think I honestly even overused the word fun on the production because it was just, that's what it was.
Sure.
Me and the color analyst, it's fun to just be able to talk and call such a cool game. It's also only the second time USC has ever played against Illinois, their first time at the State Farm Center. So whatever you want to talk about the extension of the Big Ten, it's brought in some cool teams that I never thought I would cover.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
Well, next up for Illinois, the women, it's Wednesday night. They host Wisconsin also. So Wisconsin in town here in the midweek, men on Tuesday, women on Wednesday. Good stuff. All right, we have a little bit to touch on in the world of football, a new hire on the staff for the Illini, and Devin Witherspoon is a Super Bowl champion. We will get to that in a moment. We're so pleased to welcome a new sponsor here to Light the Eye. It's Logic Coworking. Logic Coworking is a fantastic environment in Champaign for you to be productive and accomplish whatever it is you need to accomplish. And it's a friendly yet distraction-free environment to do so. Whether you are a remote worker who needs an office space, or a professor who's looking for a different environment, or a student who needs a place to study for a few hours. Logic Coworking offers fast internet, free printing, a kitchen, a conference rooms, and even a locker room with a shower if you need that. In fact, Robert and I have even made use of the space to prepare for episodes here on Light the Eye. Here's a picture of us in action at Logic Coworking. Most important, the staff is super friendly and helpful. And for your work or study needs, or maybe it's just an outside project, check out Logic Coworking. They have monthly memberships, day passes are available as well, and students get a discount. Check out Logic Coworking at the corner of Neal and St. Mary's, right behind Seven Brews in Champaign. Well, this is something new for us. While we were recording in this podcast, we got some breaking news.
Breaking news.
So we teased that we were going to talk Illinois football. That's true. And we can touch on that Devin Witherspoon is a Super Bowl champion mm-hmm. after yesterday's performance. But something has trumped that in the headlines. Illinois football has a new defensive coordinator. By the time you're consuming this, you probably know, but it's Bobby Houck. So this is our live in the moment at the time. Mm-hmm. I saw a comedian who did a special that said it was Dimitri Martin. He said, Dimitri Martin, live at the time. Yep. This is live reaction to the breaking news when it was breaking.
In this moment, yes. We are both like have no information and are speaking off the cuff.
Well, we have some information. That is, his name is Bobby Houck.
Yes.
And he's a defensive coordinator. And he was very successful as a head coach at the University of Montana with the Grizzlies.
Yes.
He, yesterday, on Sunday announced he's retiring.
It was last week.
Oh, that he was okay. Last week
he's 5 days ago. So
yeah, he recently announced he was stepping down from his position.
Yes,
and it turns out he was coming to Illinois. And yes. Brett Bielema last week indicated he knew his plan was a defensive coordinating. He just wasn't going to announce it till after the Super Bowl. Well, it's after the Super Bowl, so here we are.
I'm piecing all this together in my head right now. So Bielema says on Wednesday in his press conference, can't announce it till after the Super Bowl. Everybody runs to the defensive coaching rosters for New England and Seattle, including myself, thinking, oh, hey, it must be one of these assistants who is going to. But no, this was set with they wanted to give him a chance to retire. I mean, he's kind of a legend there in Montana. He took him to 2 national title games. I know that. I remember seeing this last week that, oh, at 61, he retired from Montana. There were a lot of national college football folks that I follow saying, like, wow, like, boy, that's, I thought he'd coach there at least 5 more years, if not longer than that. But maybe he's just ready to wrap it up and ready to be done. And so now I'm piecing all that together to be like, okay, well, now this makes sense. Bielema said after the Super Bowl because they were giving him a week to have his goodbyes at Montana and do a press conference and all of his, like, you know, I can understand that they don't want that to feel like, hey, peace out. This is just him done with the FCS thing, retiring from his great job there where he took him to national title games and everything else. And now next phase or maybe final phase of his career is coordinator in FBS football.
So we are learning right now exactly what he'll be about. I'm sure there will be press conference and more information. They say that he has a fast defense, fast physical defense. I don't know any defense that's not designed to be fit. I've never heard somebody say we play an unphysical defense.
That's a good thing we don't have a slow,
unphysical defense. We just kind of let you by.
Yes.
If you want to stop and get tackled, let us know. We'd be happy to accommodate.
And it just throws people off.
We never tackle without consent.
That's right.
look, it's a high stakes hire.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't look at FCS as plenty of FCS people can be very successful FBS. That's not a thing. You know, going back to last week, you advocated that everybody trust the process and trust the man with a plan. And the plan is Bobby Hauk, from the University of Montana.
Yep.
He knows ball, and we will see how he implements a new defensive scheme. And there will be plenty of questions. And here's the fun part. The best part about a new defensive scheme is you won't really know until game one.
No, that's the worst part of the new
defensive scheme. Isn't that the best part?
The worst part is that spring practices, we're going to be able to see like 6 minutes of one guy stretching, and that's it.
You think it's going to be a 3-4 or a 4-3?
It's going to be so shut down. Okay, now I hate it.
That's the worst part. When Aaron Henry went to Notre Dame, like, oh, now I can't.
I don't care about that. I just want to see practice. That's all I care about. it's interesting. Like, my very first, this is my first reaction because we just learned this. It's an interesting big boy football move. Like, we've seen this before with head coaches being like, you know what, I can make more as a coordinator in FBS than I can as a head coach in FCS. And we've seen, I mean, we saw the Kent State head coach leave as head coach to become offensive coordinator at Colorado. Like, there's this, like, in the upper echelons of college football with the money that's available now, it's more financially sound to take a coordinator job at a Big Ten or SEC or, you know, one of the major schools than it is to be a head coach elsewhere.
Well, Brett Bielema, Brett Bielema has always liked that each side of the ball has at least a former coordinator or former head coach. I don't know if that's intentional all the time, but Mike New is an analyst.
Yep.
That's his title, right?
Yes.
He was the head coach at Ball State.
Yep.
You know, in his first few seasons, Andy Boo was in the room, and Kevin Kane, I believe, had been a DC before. So have somebody around the leader to help with that set of eyes, knowing what a coordinator needs to think or what a head coach might be thinking.
Yeah.
In this case, there's no other former coordinators. Maybe Archie McDaniel has in the linebacker room, but he's very experienced. Mm-hmm. I don't know all the positions off the top of my head. But anyway, this gives some gravitas to the room. This is not somebody getting their first crack at coordinating. This is somebody who's been at the head coaching position and now is stepping into a defensive coordinating position. And yeah, presumably pays the same or if not more than what you could do at the FCS level, but very experienced as opposed to the youthful for a coaching position, Aaron Henry. Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing that stands out.
Yeah, I just pulled up his Wikipedia page in front of me just so I have some reference since we're just learning this. It's interesting that he was at Montana, built up the program, then left to take the UNLV job. Was not successful there. Then he went to San Diego State for a couple years as the special teams coach after he was let go by UNLV in 2014. And then he returned to Montana. And
does this guy know that Illinois doesn't have mountains?
Probably.
He's going to get here and he's like, where are the mountains?
Yes. So
Not tell you?
I'm looking at the bio here. Born in Missoula, went to Montana. Did a master's at UCLA. Then he went where he was a GA at UCLA. Then his coaching career was Northern Arizona. That's in Flagstaff, yeah. So that's up in the mountains. Colorado, mountains. Washington, there's Rainier in the background. Montana, UNLV, you can see mountains. San Diego State, you can see mountains. Montana, you see mountains. And now to Illinois. For one of the flattest counties, Champaign County, one of the flattest counties in the entire United States.
What do you like to do in your spare time? Well, I like to go mountain climbing or downhill skiing.
Yes. Sorry,
you're going to love it here.
You can get to Galena in about 3.5 hours.
Not far from Charles Mound.
Yes, yes. What is that the highest point?
That's the highest point in Illinois.
Highest point in Illinois.
I believe it is about 1,300 feet.
Which is probably way below. Because
that's part of the driftless area that bleeds into the northwest corner of Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for this geography lesson.
And geological.
Yes. He's going to be surprised. When I was in, I'm not even going to get the word right. When I was in Idaho, it is a Norwegian term. It is for when you ski behind a horse. I believe it's called skijoring or something like that. And they do one in central Idaho, some festival. It's basically like the horse is the boat and you're like on water skis. So you're holding the thing, but you're on snow skis behind a horse and you're slaloming basically behind a horse. I believe that's how it works.
If it's downhill, there's no way that doesn't end badly.
Maybe Bobby Howe can bring skijoring to central Illinois as he comes from the mountains, since we don't have any of those. We got snow. It's been snowing on the ground for 3 weeks now. So just bring a horse and a rope and we're ready for you, coach.
We got to get him on this. He's going to love it here.
Yes. Sir, are you familiar with skijoring? Well, I'm familiar with what the actual word is. Like, I'm going to get you talk for a little bit. I'm going to see if I'm getting that word right. We have the internet right here. I can find out.
Yeah, this is called prep in real time. Listen, Illinois also made a hire at tight ends coach. That is Jared Elliott, among places he's had time at was Ball State. So I'm guessing that Mike New, former Ball State coach on staff with Illinois, may have had a word or two to share about him.
As does the fact that the possible tight end TE1, the possible starter at tight end, Christian Abney, who became the number two tight end over the season and then was playing the most snaps besides Arkin at the end of the year, played under him at Ball State.
Yep.
So gets his position coach back.
One other football note, yesterday was the Super Bowl. Seattle Seahawks win 29-13. What a day for prime numbers. And what a day for number 21, Devin Witherspoon, who was a captain at the coin toss. I don't know if he was a captain all year long or not, but he was a captain at the coin toss. And for a moment, I get it. But for a moment, I was going, is he going to be the MVP of the game? Mm-hmm. He impacted it in a big time way. It was kind of a boring game mm-hmm. for the average football fan. But it was a cool moment for the U of I connections. And by the way, it was a punt fest. I was Jeremy Warner. I saw a tweet this to jog my memory. New England's punter was on Illinois' roster for a minute. Yep. I don't think he ever punted.
No, he was. I mean, he was Behringer? Recruited to be the punter, but then they Lovey brought in Blake Hayes.
Yeah,
and so Hayes started as a freshman, and Behringer
went to
Michigan State,
and he's a really good punter.
Yes, in fact, when he went to Michigan State, he didn't even like he didn't have a he wanted to go to Michigan State, but he did the literal walk-on thing, like called the coaches and said, hey, I can punt. Do you want to see me punt? And they tried him out and said, kind of kept him on retainer. And then, let me think how the story goes. The punter broke his leg, I believe, in a game, like went to kick and somebody was rushing or something like that. He injured his legs and was out. So they called him on campus. And I'm like, hey, that one kid tried out for us. And so he went from just going to class at Michigan State, getting a call in September of like, hey, we need a punter now. Our guy got injured and we've only got one other on the roster. And then he wins the job. And now he's an NFL punter. He's one of the top 32 punters in the world. How crazy is it? He's probably not even punting in the NFL unless, you know, the Michigan State starting punter is injured and he just happens to get a call. I'm like, hey, come on over. We need you.
Well, shout out to special teams, and yep. I thought maybe too the long snappers were going to be in contention for MVP at one point.
Yeah, it was. I'm happy that the thing people are going to remember from this Super Bowl is Spoon blitzing. Like that's the game story of New England had zero answer for when they would send him from the slot. Like, you know, it's all Chris Collinsworth and Mike Tirico could talk about of this is the play that's changing the game. They've sent him 9 times. It's worked a lot of the times. He's gotten sacks. He forced a fumble. He's, you know, he's completely in Drake May's head, and that's what solved this game is that one single blitz him from the slot, and he's so good at finding a gap that New England has no answer. So shout out, Spoon. That was great. I do have the Skajoring page pulled up here. Yeah,
could it be Yoring?
Could be.
I believe it's called Yogging.
Could be a soft J. Skijoring. I'm going to call it Skijoring, but it's probably pronounced Skijoring. A thrilling winter sport where the skier is pulled on skis by a horse, dog, or motor vehicle, combining elements of skiing and rodeo originating in Norway. So, yeah, it's probably...
You've decided that Bobby Norway. Hauk is into this.
Yes.
Or is it only in Idaho?
I'm just saying that that's what we have to offer Bobby Hauk. If there's no mountains, he's been around mountains his entire life. Somebody for this coach, go start a skioring club because we're going to need it because we don't have a single hill. Well, you know, there's that hill in Savoy at that park where they dug the lake and built a sledding hill.
Yeah.
That's all we got, coach. Sorry, that's all there is. You're going to have to do skioring.
I bet you I could skior 10 feet right now. No training. All right, what do we
call donate money to. Sorry.
Continue. They're practicing right now over in the armory, track and field.
The skioring team is on the other side of that wall.
It's a club team, though. When we come back, Robert had his usual adventure is getting into a stadium, so we will close out with that. All right, before we go, once again, you're blurring the lines of journalism and fandom.
Yes.
Can I reveal?
Yeah, 100%.
I know, you're always an open book.
Yes.
So this guy.
Tell the story, yeah.
This guy, mm-hmm. I get to Breslin Center mm-hmm. and see the media seating chart.
And thankfully, you looked for my name.
Well, I was just curious because, you know, fun, okay, where is everyone sitting? And the radio position is up high where all the rest of that's becoming more of a thing in basketball arenas because they sell the floor seats, so they perch the radio up high.
Yep.
Okay. I don't see Robert Rosenthal listed anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I know you're coming to the game.
Yes.
You've talked about this. I know mm-hmm. you're in East Lansing.
Mm-hmm.
So I messaged you to say, hey, I don't see you listed anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why weren't you listed, Robert?
So as soon as you sent me that message, I'm like, look, I know I looked this up last week. Go to my Gmail, type in Michigan State credential into the search bar. There it is. The very first thing says Michigan State credentials approved. I had looked for that email last week just to make sure. I couldn't remember if several weeks ago I had applied or not. You know, I apply like for four games at a time. I couldn't remember if I'd apply for this one. Oh, there's the confirmation email. We're good. So as soon as you didn't see it, I'm like, oh, I'm just going to have to send them that and say, hey, I'm approved here. I look at it. I pull up the actual email.
Say, hey, Mr. Michigan State.
Exactly. Hey, you forgot me.
Yeah.
And the date is January 16th, 2025. So when I had done the Gmail search, you know, the first thing that pops up on top of the list says January. I'm good, right? Nope. That was from last year's game, and I hadn't applied for a credential for this year's game.
So what's old Robert going to do? He's in a bind.
He goes to StubHub, and he buys a ticket for, what was it, total? $53? Yeah, $53 to get myself into that stadium.
So you had yourself a seat.
Yes, yes.
Did you use that seat?
No, no. I'm a stander.
So you just stood the whole time?
Yes. I didn't go to the seat. I'm not the kind of guy who wants to just sit down in a big section by myself of Michigan State fans. I need a group with me if I'm going to enjoy that experience. If I'm just solo surrounded by green, that's not going to be very fun for me. So I just found the standing room place. I like pacing. If I could stand for every game, I would. I do it for football. I stand for the entire game. So for basketball, if I could, if there was a spot in the State Farm Center where I could stand, I would do it because it's just, I'm an active person. I got to rock back and forth. I got to pace a little bit. I got to work out my emotions as the game is going along.
Well, in the end, Michigan State got their cut from you, didn't they?
Yes. Yes. It was, gosh, is this three in a row up there now? Like, I was at the Trent game, and that was a lot of fun, but I think we've now lost three in a row there, 23, 24, 25, yeah, or 20, yeah, something like that, three in a row there. Yeah. So, yeah,
I think Underwood's 1-6 at Breslin.
Okay, yeah, it's been a rough couple of years taking that trip. I enjoy the trip. I'm on the train. I can walk to the stadium. I can buy a ticket if I need to. And it's been a fun trip, but not a very fun outcome in that building.
We'll leave it there.
Okay.
We are looking forward to bringing you our next episode. Our guest will be Mike Small, the head coach of Illinois Men's Golf. I always enjoy listening to Mike Small because I feel like I get emboldened to go after whatever it is, even though I don't golf particularly well at all. He can... He's a master psychologist.
Make you a better anything.
Yes, that's right.
Yep.
Maybe, certainly one of, if not the best coach in any sport in Illinois history. So we're looking forward to a conversation with Mike Small. I hope you let me talk to him, Robert, because
he and I can talk for a long time about these golf teams. Let's leave it at that.
In the meantime, thanks so much to Ella Peterson for her fine work as our producer today. Thanks to everybody in the Center for Innovation, Teaching, and Learning for hosting us here in the Armory on the campus of the University of Illinois. If you would, please take a moment to like and subscribe. And thanks to our presenting sponsor, the U of I Credit Union. Until next time, we'll join you again when we light the eye.
See, to me, we only see one-sided, and the house, it won't stand, and the world's divided. Fighting battles in the name of peace, by thinking violence increased will make the violence cease. But don't go on pretending it's just overseas.